LiveWire Network with Jason Moyle.
Hello, I'm Jason. Welcome to LiveWire Network. My guest on the show today rose to fame in the 80s with the band Prefab Sprout. A very special welcome to Martin Akaloon.
Hi, Jason. I'd say that I'd query your introduction as rose to fame. I think I'm still haven't reached fame, but I was involved with the band from the get-go. And
okay.
Thank you for having me.
That's okay. So first of all, tell us about what inspired you and your brother, because you and your brother started the band, formed the band. Yeah. In the early days, what inspired you to start the band?
We loved the Beatles from, they came out when I was born. I was kind of born around about the time the Beatles broke. And from that point on, they were always there, them and the Stones and probably the Bachelors as well.
Okay, yeah.
but yeah, it was just music was all around us, and I was playing the guitar. And by the time I'd reached 7 years old, I was playing the guitar. So that was 1969, and it was all, you know, it was all exciting, and so it was just my brother started to write his own songs when he was 11. So I'd be about that age. I was about 7 years old. He's 5 years older than me. Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Kind of, you know, it was. We just wanted to be like all our heroes. So by the time T-Rex came around, which was the early, we caught onto them just before they broke out with Ride a White Swan, so that we kind of were aware of them as Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yep.
And they were doing Deborah, all of that stuff. And they sat cross-legged on the floor just playing acoustic guitar and percussion. And you kind of thought, well, yeah, this is great. We can do all that.
And so you started the band from a very, very early age. What made you then say, right, we can make this into actually a professional band and turn it into our career?
In all of those things, it's a gradual process. You just want to get better at what you do. You want to write better songs. You want to, you'd hear everything from Neil Young to Jimmy Webb songs, and you'd be trying to get your head around what was that was great about them. You'd hear, we just loved music, all kinds of music. There was no kind of variance. It was like you're either good or you, and okay. and you just thought, well, our songs are as good as this. Our songs, that's a good song, whether it's recorded by the Rolling Stones or whether it's played by us. We could tell a good song when one came along, and my brother was writing good songs that were getting better and better and better. So to the point where by long before we had a hit or anything like that, my brother had written things like Bonnie and Johnny and Farron Young back in the 70s when other bands like The Clash had barely met.
Okay.
So there were good songs then. That was the caliber of the songs that he was doing, but he'd been doing it for so long that he'd had time to work out what hits home, and or at least have an idea of what hits home for himself. I think what you should do is, if you make anything, try and please yourself.
Absolutely.
And try and be good, and then if you're pleased with what you do, if one person likes it other than you, then you're 100% up on the deal.
Okay.
And so you kind of, that's what we did.
Brilliant. And he was the main songwriter. Did you ever?
Yeah, he was the songwriter.
You didn't dabble in songwriting at all? Or?
I did dabble in songwriting, but you know when you're on the wrong end of the stick.
No worries.
Yeah, it's kind of, I can do it, but they would never compare. And you kind of you also know that I can get a meeting with a record label saying, "Hi, whoever I am from whatever the band is," but you know that they'll only ever be interested in the songs of my brother.
Yeah, okay. You
know, the first question would be, when is the catalogue up for renewal?
Brilliant.
So you can, yeah, let's not bother.
Okay, so Wendy Smith joined the band, So tell us about how that came about and what unique elements she brought to the band.
Well, she was a friend of our roadies. When I say roadies, it's just like a mate, one of our mates, John. She'd come along to gigs with him. John played the basketball on a track. He bounced a basketball at the beginning of one of the tracks on Swoon, a song called "I Never Play Basketball Now," and he got it in time with the drums. And in those days, we had no way of syncing anything. So the drums were recorded live without a click drum. John bounced a ball and got it in time. I don't know how he managed to do it, but he did. It was one take and it worked. So he's immortalized on our records. But Wendy was there. She'd come along to the gigs, and she looked like she could sing. And we asked her if she'd sing on something, so she sang on a demo that we did called Cherry Tree. And then later on, her and two of her friends were. We thought it was around about the time of Human League going from being a synth band to having two girl singers, and then you had the Fun Boy 3, which was the Specials working with Bananarama, and you kind of thought we need to. It was a definite. I think our drummer Mick Salmon was the sort of the person who said we need to get some visuals involved. We were great sonically, and so Wendy and Fiona and another girl who didn't join, but she went on to become a quite a famous British actress. They came along and did some singing with us, and then Fiona went off and did drama at college and other things, and Wendy stayed.
Brilliant, brilliant. And so your first single was on Candle Records, I believe,
Yeah.
and it was called Lions in My
My Own
Own
Garden.
Garden. Yeah.
Every exit someone. So it was an anagram
Yeah.
of the place Limoges in France, which was an area famed for its pottery and its ceramics and things like that. So yeah, and Paddy's girlfriend, the story, I mean, Paddy's girlfriend was over there studying at the time. So yeah, and so that was our first single, and that was my record label. I put it out on that. I took a job working for, they were called Dryburn Hospital at the time. It's Durham Hospital,
Okay.
Durham Area Health Authority. That is the correct title. So I was driving all kinds of things, linen supplies, bloods, and I'd be servicing all the hospitals and even the prisons in the area. I was always able to drive from a very early age. So
Okay.
yeah. So I did that and got the funding together to put out a record, because I kind of knew that unless you got on at the time, it was the one way into putting your record out was to get airplay. And you could only get airplay through, at the time, John Peel and then Kid Jensen. So I just did that. I did what everybody else does that needed to get the records out. Yeah. And I'd send them off, and I'd go down to London. I'd hitch down to London and walk around with my originally I went around with cassettes, then I took the record down, just knocking on doors. In those days there wasn't a Google map, there
No.
wasn't a Google contacts. You couldn't just I'd go into I'd come in I'd get the bus into Newcastle, and I'd go to the post office, and they'd have a yellow pages which listed all the businesses in London. And I'd look at publishers, record companies, management, artist management, things like that, agencies. And I'd just go knocking door from door to door with my little notebook in my back pocket and just walk the streets of London.
So you were the kind of the plugger as well for your own band. You were,
At the beginning, yeah,
yeah.
because you kind of know that you've just got to get on and do it. In the early days, it was just, you just have to do this. But once you got onto John Peel's show, then people started contacting you. So Rob Dickens from Warner Brothers got straight in touch with us. By that time, we had the second he heard it and got in touch with us. By that time, we had a manager who was Keith Armstrong, who ran the HMV shop in Newcastle. He was a very young guy, and he was the youngest area manager for HMV. And he kind of took us under his sort of like him and his colleagues' wing kind of thing, along with a few other bands. He had Martin Stevenson and the Dandies. He also had a band called Hurrah, and I had us, and I had a band called the Cane Gang. So that was the intention. I was going to put out a Cane Gang record as a follow-up thing. And then we got together, and he was 5 years older than us. Everybody in the Cane Gang, or Paddy, all 5 years older than us. So I kind of thought they're more adult in their approach, whereas I was more gung ho, so I let them get on with it.
Okay, and you went on to get signed by Kitchenware Records, didn't you? So that was
Kitchenware Records, they signed us, and then we joined Sony Liked Swoon, our first album. So we'd recorded that before meeting Swoon, but they heard five tracks from us, and Muff Winwood, the A&R guy there, who's brother was Stevie Winwood, and they'd both been in the Spencer Davis Group, and Muff had produced records. I think he produced Dire Straits' early records. I think he might have done Sultans of Swing. He did Cat Stevens. He did the Bay City Rollers. He did Sparks. This house in this town and big enough for the both of us. He had a great track record. He knew everybody. He'd worked with everybody, and he was just really straight talking. Oh, no gloss about it. He just told you how things were, and I loved him for it. It was brilliant. It was an education. Both him and Rob Dickens from Warner Brothers were remained good friends throughout our careers, long after Muff left Sony and retired, and Rob was, you know, he was never involved with the Sprouts, but he always liked us and always was a good person to speak to for business advice. Mm-hmm. And seeing it from the industry perspective and being able to give us an angle on Sony that wasn't weighted in any way, shape or form by contracts. So it was just great and a brilliant education from, you know, I loved the music industry. I loved the business. So it's kind of, I got a real kick out of the way they approach things.
We'll be back with Martin in a minute, but right now we're going to play another track from Prefab Sprout. This is When Love Breaks Down.
September rain.
That was When Love Breaks Down by Prefab Sprout. I continued our conversation by asking Martin which one was his favourite Prefab Sprout track.
I'm always looking for my favourite one. It's always the next one.
Ah, right.
I've kind of, you do them, you like them, move on.
Right.
Start thinking about the next one and the next one and the next one. So when they come along, they're always my favourite.
And you had a consistent success with albums. You had 9 top 40 albums in the UK album chart. So you had a really big fan base.
Right.
And
yeah.
They still have. I mean,
yeah. Yeah. Those that are still with us. Yeah. But they've, you know, I'm currently touring the catalogues of all of the songs. So I start doing Steve McQueen, which was our second album. Start doing that in October of this year. So I'm going out playing all the songs live, just solo. But you meet when you go out, and I've just done 2 tours of that, last 2 years doing that. But you go out and you see people who turn up and they bring their children, or their children turn up and they've been brought up by their parents, putting them in the car and listening to our records. So you don't know quite, you might think it's all going to be older people, but there's a lot of people turn up who are in their 30s or younger. There's quite a lot of younger people turning up who know our records. And then you have other things like the internet and other people, influencers talking about them that create that. But the amount of people who've turned up and they've named their children after songs that we've recorded, and the children are with them now, and they're adults and they have children, and it's kind of astonishing.
And it carries on, doesn't it? That's the thing.
We had an album called Jordan the Comeback, and I played Sheffield I think it was at the beginning of the year, back in March or April, and 2 people turned up, and at the end of the night, and they're getting t-shirts and records signed, and 2 people had named their children Jordan. And those children were there, and they were 30-year-olds.
Right.
So it's kind of, it's just weird the effect that your songs have. You don't know, when you write these songs, you don't know what effect they will have on other people until years later. I came across an advert recently that was done in 2007 for HMV, and they were going around getting quotes of people, songwriters, and what was their inspiration? And they had a Bjork poster, and Bjork was on the poster, and it said her inspiration was a song from our album, Steve McQueen, and it has the lyrics, "Life's not complete until your heart's missed a beat and you'll never make it up or turn back the clock." And you think, you don't know that Bjork's going to, or somebody's going to be affected by that years later. You can only hope to please yourself, but when it happens, it's a bonus.
Absolutely. And so that's my next question really was about going the 40th anniversary celebrations of Steve McQueen, which you're going out now. What excites you the most about playing the album in full?
What excites me the most about playing the album in full?
Oh, yeah.
Getting to the end of it in one piece.
Right.
I've played all the tracks before. I know I'm kind of updating them slightly. I might play other tracks. Well, I might play other tracks that didn't make the album. I don't know. We'll see. I think a lot of people have a lot of their memories and emotions invested in those songs. So I will be, I'm particularly diligent in not messing them up.
Okay.
I need to get them right. So my main thing will be to enjoy it and to know that people are out there enjoying it, and just to keep calm and just do it justice.
And will there be any surprises? Will there be any kind of newish songs that in there?
Oh, yeah, there'll be all kinds of things in there. I haven't decided the set list yet, but the songs, the Steve McQueen, the album, the songs on there were pretty good. All of them are great. They're great fun to play as well. Some of the songs, I think lots of people like the first side, particularly drawn to that, but I do know that the people like the second side as well, which is a bit more low key. I don't know whether there's any singles from the second side, but they can be made quite exciting, and you've got to think about it differently. So some songs that are on the record, there's a song called Blueberry Pies, which I've always thought could have been Done Great by Led Zeppelin. Now that's mad, but I kind of have an idea in my head of how you could do that. I know it won't sound anything like it, but I just like the idea of Robert Plant singing it and Jimmy Page playing guitar on it, even though it's all sequences basically.
And you can play around with it as well. It's you know, you can redesign it, can't you?
You can. Yeah, you've got to not take it too far from what I think people want. But you can alter the time signatures, you can do all sorts of things. And I've only got six strings on a guitar. So I've got to be selective about which ones I leave out and which ones I use and how you use them. But I've got a massive left hand. I don't know whether you can see it, but
yes.
It can cover a lot of ground on a guitar. I've spent years on a 5-string bass. Okay. So it knows how to stretch.
Brilliant. So you mentioned websites and things like that. You mentioned online. Have you got website and social media?
Well, I think I've got Martin McAloon on Instagram. I've got Felix Culper on Twitter. I've got Prefab Sprout Official on Facebook. I've got various. So it really, and I never know which one's plugged into which thing. So
okay.
People contact me and I never know where it's coming from. And I'll find messages from years gone by. So yeah, just you'll find me.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got a website. No, sorry. I've got a website, haven't I? I've got martinmacaloon.com.
Okay. Martinmacaloon.com.
You'll find all the links there. That's what I should have said first.
Never mind. That's fine. Martinmacaloon.com.
Yeah. 3 years old. I think I'm doing all right.
Okay. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Martin. Good luck with the tour. Good luck with all the material. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks ever so much. Look after yourself, Jess.
Thank you.
Now I'm dancing on my own. I'm the king of
Live Wire Network is produced by Steve Osborne Media.